aging begins before we are born, actually. When we are born, we already have what is called an aging thymus gland. Involutional changes occur in that. Even before we are born, it begins to age. Second thing, our spleen ages. That also has to do with our immune system. Our spleen begins to age even before we are born. And so we have these two organs that are pretty easy to tell that they are aging already by the time we are born. Then other things age. Some of our organs age little by little, and some age sort of all at once. That's the thing that we would really like, is for our organs, all of them, to age all at once, having been perfectly functioning right up until the day we die. And in some countries, such as in some parts of Asia, the people are mainly farmers. They work hard, and they may work in the fields all the time until they're 140 or 50 years of age. What's the name of that town, that country?
Hunza.
And the Hunza cuts live great long ages, and several generations live in one household. And one day, everybody works in the fields and come home, have a good night of sleep. Next morning, they get up and they're ready for a nice big breakfast so they can work in the fields again. Great-great-great-grandpa does not show up. So great-great-great-granddaughter is sent in to wake grandpa up. And that's unusual. He's usually up and ready for breakfast. So they sent great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter goes in, and she can't wake him up. So she comes back and says, "Mom, I can't wake Grandpa up. You're going to have to go wake him up." So she goes in and finds him dead. Died in his sleep, worked the day before, and that often happens. All the organs died at one time. With us, I've already mentioned about the thymus and the spleen. That probably is normal for us. We don't know for sure. It may be abnormal. My personal opinion is that it's a product of our sinful world. That in the earth made new, when babies are born, if they are born in the earth made new, that they will not be born with aging thymuses and aging spleens. So we then begin, our teeth begin to age, and we start having to have carious teeth filled. And then our eyes begin to fail, and we have to start wearing glasses for vision. And then our skin begins to age, and we start having little things. You see how we go? We go organ by organ. Not all of them healthy until all of one day they all fail at once, which is probably the ideal way. So what we want to do is to try to keep all of these organs functioning right up until the very end. So we want to find out some ways that we can, number one, maybe learn what things do have to do with aging, and how to get rid of those. So let's try. Let's try to see if we can do that. One is how to reduce inflammation and CRP. Okay, CRP. What is that? Anybody know? C-reactive protein. That's the C-reactive protein. It is a protein produced in the blood. It turns up in the blood when we have any kind of inflammation anywhere in the body. That can be in the uterus with an inflamed fibroid that's degenerating. It can give off deterioration products, and they turn up in the blood as C-reactive protein. We may also have an aging arterial tree with atherosclerosis, or hardening of the arteries, and various other kinds of arterial diseases. And these arterial diseases can give off a protein called C-reactive protein. Now, people who are overweight, it has been clearly shown that if they will simply lose weight, the C-reactive protein will go right down. and exercise, so especially weight loss and exercise, can halve the CRP in a very short time. And a number of studies have been done, even with children. One study was done on young boys, all of them overweight, seriously overweight, and found that these overweight boys, when they lost weight, they would have a reduction. They would have a reduction in the CRP, and a reduction in any other marker for some chronic illness associated with a bad lifestyle. Now, what is a bad lifestyle? Well, you all know what it is. I don't need to tell you that everybody is talking about lifestyle factors. What you may not know that I might be able to tell you is just how strongly we need to believe in these things having to do with lifestyle changes. How strongly do we need to understand about free fats? Some people can have some free fats. If you're overweight, you don't need free fats. You can leave them off. They are not essential. But we do need whole grains. We need beans. In fact, beans for diabetics are wonderful. They probably all diabetics should have beans at every meal. And I mentioned to you my favorite recipe of scrambled soybeans, and I recommend that to you. It's a scrambled soybeans. It's a good dish. Make it taste good. If you're a good cook, you can make it taste good. If you make your bad foods taste good, you can make your good foods taste good too. Just flavor them, season them, and make them taste good. Good cooks know how to do that. Now, reduction of weight will also reduce blood pressure if it's up. If it's not up, would it lower your blood pressure to dangerous levels if you lose weight and your blood pressure is already not up? What's going to happen? No, it's not going to do that. Why is that? Because our Lord is merciful. Our Lord lets us correct our bad habits, and He doesn't penalize us at all. It doesn't make the blood pressure go down if it's not up. And it doesn't make the blood sugar go down if it's not up. And it doesn't make our blood lipids like cholesterol and triglycerides, doesn't make them go down too far if or down at all if they're not up. Uric acid won't go down if it's not needed to go down. Do you see? But weight control will make all of these go down. And we'll be talking about those tomorrow when we talk about the blood tests. When these measures were taken, cardiac events were reduced from 44% to 24% in an 8-year study. That was published in a very respected journal, New England Journal of Medicine, one of our very best ones. That was in 2003. Okay. Now, pro-inflammatory factors, overeating, overexercising, almost any intemperance, junk foods, no room in our diet for junk foods, not one meal. Leave them all off. I've been telling you how much we need the antioxidants from fruits and vegetables and whole grains, and I've been telling you that there is no room in the diet for foods that are not nourishing foods. Violating the 8 natural laws of health, heat-generated advanced glycation end products. What are they? AGEs. Well, they are what are formed in carbohydrates when we overcook them. How can you overcook carbohydrates? One of the best ways is with your toaster. We put the bread in. Oh, smell that little scorch. Oh, get the toaster. So you pull the bread out. Yeah, it's a little bit too brown, but scrape it a little and eat the rest of it. If your scraping operation does not result in a piece of toast that has no smell of scorch about it and no taste of bitterness about it, don't eat it. It's time for it to be recycled. Don't recycle it through the body because it then becomes a junk food. And AGEs are sources of pro-inflammatory factors. What are pro-inflammatory factors a marker for? Heart disease, strokes, cancer, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's. So we don't want these elevated in our blood. Where does the heat come from? Toasters, microwaves, overcooking. Microwaves because they overheat in one little point where the microwave hits. So be careful with your microwave. Always have one that has a table that turns. And then don't cook things with a microwave. Cook with your oven or your stovetop. And just heat with a microwave if you use a microwave at all. I use the microwave principally in my home to heat up fomentation pads. Now here's the study I was telling you about. You know, I don't believe this is the one that has the Sister Vilma. I don't believe this is the one. Let me just check here, another one or two. Nope, this is not the one. You know, tell that lady in the orange colored shirt that I don't need David. Yeah. Okay. I'm not going to need David. So, yeah, did he go? All right, very good. I don't need him. And this is not the program that has that in it that's going to show. I was going to show you a way, and maybe I will go ahead and show you the way that you can check yourself for aging of the platelets, which can increase your risk of getting a blood clot or a bleed. So would you bring that stool that's over there, right over here, and I'm going to show you how to do that. I did have a picture of it in my other program, but we brought up the wrong program. I like this one better for you, so I'm glad that we've got this one, but unfortunately doesn't have that nice picture. Would you sit right there? Now I'm going to show you how to do this. This is called a capillary fragility test. And this cuff is for a bigger arm than Sister Vilma has, and you should not use this for ordinary taking. Get the right sized cup. If you don't have a large arm, quite large around, then you don't need one that's this broad and this wide. Get one that's the proper width for your arm. And if you don't know, then you can. Oh, look, got this one right here. This is it. This is the one for ordinary sized arm, and that's what we need here. And then we've got this nice little device here. I'd like to have one of these myself, but this is not mine. Sister Vilma borrowed this from me from the clinic here, and so that I could show you this. Now let's see how you do this. I think it's going to be like so, and you put this right here, and this part goes over the. I need you a little closer here, or mine, just let you hold that. Okay, and this part goes right, it says right here on it, most blood pressure cuffs will, says where the artery is. Where is the artery going to be? Just a little outside of the middle of the inside of the elbow right here. So here's what we do. Just put this right here, right there in the inside, and bring this part around, and it's going to fasten nicely right there, just like that. And then... Oh, I don't even need to. Yes, I do. I need to have this as well. Some of these blood pressure cuffs. You can buy this whole apparatus for under $20 if you don't mind not being fancy. This one is fancy, and I like it. Only has one tube that you have to deal with, but you don't have to have it. And then when you use the stethoscope, it should... Since your ear canals point forward and upward, then you want these ear pieces also to point forward and upward, so that when you put them in, you've got a straight shot right to your eardrum. So then you just pump this up.
It's not closed, probably. You need to close it.
Yeah, okay. And you pump it up until you get it high enough that you can then until you can hear the systolic. Okay, I'm beginning to hear it now. It's at 110. Let's see. Let me hold that. It's at 110, and I'm just guessing because this is a sort of a dry run. 110, and then her diastolic is down at 68. Okay, so I know now what her blood pressure is. So now I don't need this anymore, and I can set this aside. And now all I have to do is to pump her blood, pump the pressure up on this cuff to halfway between 110, which is her systolic, and 68, which is her diastolic. And so I'll pump it up right here. Oops, you have to close this thing up. Some of the automatic ones, you don't have to. Okay, pump it up. Okay, so we'll pump it up right halfway in between, and we let it stay there for 5 minutes, right there. Now, at the end of 5 minutes, we will have a number of petechial points right here, all along here. Petechia are tiny little hemorrhagic points that occur in the skin because capillaries broke. Capillaries broke. Now, if she has more, at the end of that time, if she has more than 20 per square inch, it is abnormal. Abnormal. And that means her platelets are abnormal and that her clotting ability is abnormal. And so she is more likely to either clot or bleed, one or the other, either clot or bleed, and either one could give her a stroke or some other problem with her blood. Okay, any questions about this? It's called a capillary fragility test. You can look it up on the internet and find it. It's also called a Ruppel-Lead test, but just look up capillary fragility and you've got just what you need. Here, you can take this. You may have three or four per square inch, but you measure off an inch, square inch, and if there are more than 20, that's abnormal. You should have no more than three or four in a square inch. All right. Now, that's one test. Let's do another one. And if I could have you as my guinea pig for this as well. Now, this one is called a capillary refilling test. Okay, I hold her finger just a little above her heart, you see? Okay, now I'm going to show you what to do. I'm going to put pressure right here at the base of her nail until it blanches. That means it turns, it gets the blood out of it. Okay, so I'm doing that until it blanches. And then I count with a stopwatch how many seconds it takes for it to refill. 1.5. That's all it took for hers to refill. If yours is more than 2, that is abnormal. You have blood vessel disease. And you need to find out what and how to correct it. Now, your blood vessel disease may be no more serious than dehydration, but dehydration can make you have slow capillary refilling, chilling of your fingers will also make it so that you will have slow capillary refilling. You will not be able to see it if you have nail polish on, so you have to take that off first so that you can see when it's blanched and also when it refills. Okay, so these are a couple of little tests that can help you know about your blood and also about your arterial tree. Hardening of the arteries can cause that problem. Low thyroid can cause slow capillary refilling. We had a man who came one time to UT Pines. He was already developing gangrene. He had severe diabetes, and he was already developing gangrene and had a large blister on the side of each foot. So I did this little capillary refilling test on him with a stopwatch, which you can buy at Walmart for very inexpensively. And I did this little capillary refilling test on his toenail, and his toe took 32 seconds to refill. And that was in the hot summertime, and he was well hydrated. So you can see that it is a good little test that can tell you when you have arterial disease. His was really severe. All right, now let's go to some more pro-inflammatory factors. We have talked about all of these, so let's go to our next one. And those who were having a lot of AGEs, after 2 weeks on a diet low or devoid of AGEs, advanced glycation and products, the following results were found. 30% reduction in the serum AGEs. Tumor necrosis factor was reduced. What is that? Tumor necrosis factor is a factor that we have if we have any kind of tumor that we are killing. And I told you when I talked about cancer, how our own natural killer cells can cause you to kill a cancer before it gets a hold of you. And so your part is to keep your natural killer cells healthy. And how do you do that? By all these things we're talking about. Same thing that causes susceptibility to strokes causes also susceptibility to cancer, for the most part. And increased and poor and insulin resistance is associated with the problems that we're talking about. Strokes, hypertension, diabetes, high lipids, high triglycerides, and HDL, and low and LDL, and low HDL. Those are the things that are involved in this. This was a study done by Jan Breslow, who is a very prominent researcher in aging. C-reactive protein was reduced, and I hope you will take note of this because tomorrow I will be telling you what things will cause your C-reactive protein to... I will be telling you what your C-reactive protein is and what represents a normal, but I won't tell you what things will bring it down. So today you need to know that. Vascular adhesin molecule 1 rose. Now, this is a protective substance for blood vessels, just like the nitric oxide that I mentioned other is a protective and health-giving factor in blood vessels. And the LDL was decreased, all of that, simply by reducing AGEs. Where do we get those? Overcooking or overheating carbohydrates. Okay, glycotoxins are a major risk factor for diabetic angiopathy and other complications of diabetes. Common commercial foods and packages must be analyzed for AGEs. Flakes, chips, crackers, plastics. All of these can increase the AGEs, advanced glycation end products, which encourage disease of all kinds. Here, the diabetic angiopathy, that's blood vessel disease, and all other complications of diabetes. That would be the retinopathy in the eyes, the nephropathy in the kidneys, the neuropathy in the nerves that we talked about when we talked about diabetes. Okay? Any questions about these so far? Yes?
In general, bread crust is normal.
Bread crust in the normal baking of bread does not have many AGEs. We'll have a few, but not many, and you can properly... In fact, we need to have bread that is properly browned. If it is not, then it will not be properly cooked, and then we'll have another problem that goes with to our brain as well, and that is inadequately cooked starches, which then make little partially digestible starch granules that are small enough to get into the blood system, but not small enough to go through capillary beds, such as many of those in the brain. We will have a little arteriole, the smallest of our arteries, coming down like this, and branching into a capillary bed. And these partially digested starches from grains and from potatoes, white potatoes, can go down a certain distance, but they get to right here, and they are too large to go in here. They're not as small as a red blood cell or a white blood cell, but they're small enough to get into the blood vessels that come that far. So in the adrenals, in the bones, in the brain, and all other places where we have a rich capillary bed, there we may have these little things to stop. And they can't. And then all of the blood that should go out in here is going to be stopped, and you will get a little microabscess, or what we might call a microinfarction. We don't like that, especially not in the brain, or the adrenals, or the bones, or any other place where we have capillary beds. French fries? French fries are well cooked, but what are you going to have with French fries?
Well, I know that, but I mean...
You're going to have with French fries...
I know,
but I want to tell everybody else, too. That browning on the outside is probably not too much, unless they are really crisp on the ends, and sometimes they will be really crisp on the ends, and a little overcooked. When any starch is overcooked, it's going to be not good for you. But you'll have the trans fatty acids. You'll also have changes in the fats that are unhelpful, like oxidation of fats, which greatly encourage hardening of the arteries, also called atherosclerosis. Any other question? Flakes?
Like
corn flakes?
Cereal flakes.
Cereal flakes, yes. Good, thank you. Any other question? Yes.
Cans
that vegetables come in?
Some of them have a liner in.
Some of them have a plastic lining in them. Many of those are white. If they are white, they are not so bad as the transparent ones. The transparent ones are so bad. Yeah. Frozen vegetables come in plastics, and those are all right. The hotter the food is, and the more acid the food is, the more likely it is to leach large quantities of the bisphenols and the phthalates into the water and food substances. So, good questions. All right. I toast my bread. How do I toast it? I use a toaster oven, or I use a toaster. I'm very careful that I don't let it burn most of the time. And if it burns, then what do? Well, I've got a nice garden, and I save my compost, so it goes in the compost, and I spank myself a little bit for not watching the toaster a little better and wasting that money. Yeah. Don't eat that. But isn't it charcoal? Isn't that just charcoal? And charcoal is good for us. It's a good cleanser, isn't it? So we should eat that because it's charcoal. Is it charcoal? No, it isn't charcoal. It is simply scorched food. And scorched food is not charcoal. Charcoal is pure carbon. You remember I told you that the other day. Charcoal is pure carbon. There are two other pure carbon compounds. One is called diamond, pure carbon. The other is called graphite, pure carbon. And then charcoal is pure carbon. Those three pure carbon compounds. And they are stable, and they are far from scorched food, any of the three. So don't eat scorched food. It's not helpful. Okay, herbs for the heart. One herb, hawthorn berry. It increases perfusion of the heart, slows a racing heart, improves stroke volume by 30% in 10 minutes of drinking a tea, of hawthorn berry tea. it improves your stroke volume. Stroke volume. Stroke volume is the beat of the heart. When the heart beats, that's called stroke volume. The amount of blood that the heart pumps out with each beat is called stroke volume. So it improves stroke volume by 30% in 10 minutes. So here is what hawthorn berry does. Hawthorn is also anti-inflammatory. Anti-inflammatory is also what cortisone is and other steroids. So hawthorn berry can help you not to have to use steroids. Nitroglycerin can also be helped, can be replaced by hawthorn berry. Digitalis is what we use to improve stroke volume in people who have congestive heart failure. That's right. Buy the berries. And you could get the berries themselves. I like to pulverize them a little bit, but you don't really have to. You'll get almost as much extraction with water. You have to boil it, boil the berries. Simmer gently. Do not boil vigorously. Most herbs need to be simmered, if they're going to be simmered at all, or just steeped. Steeped to extract the active ingredients.
Are the capsules good?
Yes, you can use the capsules and you can use the tincture, but you can also get the important thing is to get fresh herbs if you're going to use either capsules or teas, because they can sit around for a long time. Once they are made into a tincture, they're much more stable. So I like to use the tinctures. Okay. Four times a day. Uh-huh. This is a treatment routine, 4 times a day. Yes.
If you have hawthorn berry bushes in your yard, and you can pick the berries off of those?
You can indeed. Now, is that also what we call around here the hog haw? Because that hog haw.
I don't know. It sits a little pretty pink and white flowers on it.
And has a little cluster of berries on it. The clusters of red berries, that's the hawthorn berry. It grows a lot in Europe. It's not so common growing wildly here, but we do have what the local people here call the hog haw. And that is a little yellow berry. It looks like a tiny little apple and tastes like a tiny little delicious, yellow delicious apple. Slightly reddish. And apples have the same, are in the same Crataegus family that hawthorn is, and especially the crab apples. Crab apples are a double first cousin to hawthorn berry.
What about
green apples? You mean like Granny Smiths or like immature? Granny Smiths are good. Yeah, and delicious are good. Rhones are good. Jonathan's are good. Apples are all good. Yeah. Okay. Now let me tell you about digitalis. And I'm sure that every time I mention an herb, somebody wonders, is that a dangerous herb? Wouldn't it be a dangerous herb? And the answer is this, that most herbs are not dangerous. In fact, most medicinal herbs are incredibly safe. Incredibly safe. Especially if you compare them to something you can get from over the counter. Just over the counter drugs, like aspirin. Now let me tell you about digitalis, when we used to use it as an herb. When I was in medical school back in the 50s, we used digitalis as an herb. That was our standard treatment for congestive heart failure. Congestive heart failure is today treated by digoxin. Thank you so much. Digoxin came out when I was in medical school. Now remember, digitalis leaf foxglove. You know foxglove. Grows in gardens. Foxglove has this unpleasant, toxic quality. Foxglove, if you take too much of it, that's digitalis, will cause you to lose your appetite after a little bit. If you get a little overdosed on it. And then pretty soon it will make you get nausea. And then pretty soon it will make you vomit so that you cannot keep anything down. Well, that was an unwanted side effect of digitalis. We didn't like that because our patients often came in, "Doctor, that medicine that you gave me makes me lose my appetite. When I take that drug, I can't eat. I don't have any appetite." Now, if they don't have an appetite, probably, and especially if they get nausea and vomiting, they're not going to be able to take their digitalis either, because they vomit up everything, including water. So they can't take their medicine, and so it loses its toxicity. Now, get this point. When I was in medical school, digoxin came out. By the way, if they keep on taking their medicine, because this is my heart medicine, I've got to take my heart medicine. So they keep on taking it, they force it down. It can intoxicate your heart so that you, the first sign or the last sign of the toxicity of digitalis is cardiac standstill. Ooh, bad drug. Digoxin did not have loss of appetite, did not have nausea or vomiting. So patients can take that until they come to cardiac standstill and nobody ever knows it. Which is the best one, digitalis or digoxin? Well, I say right off, I want to have that side effect so that if I'm intoxicating a patient, I know it. Now, of course, it was not common that we, even with digitalis, that we had the loss of appetite and the nausea and the vomiting. We didn't have it commonly because we were, you know, you get pretty good at making it so that you just get the effect and don't get toxicity. But you did have that safeguard if you started getting time. So I say that now we don't use digitalis now. We don't use foxglove now. What we do use is hawthorn berry, and that gives us some digitalis effect. We also use motherwort, which will slow the heartbeat as digitalis will, as we have a need to in congestive heart failure. And lily of the valley, it also has some of the same thing in it that digitalis has. And we can use those which have much less of the substance that could be toxic or the compound that could be toxic. So again, I say herbs, medicinal herbs, are incredibly safe as compared to anything you get over the counter. Anything. That includes aspirin. How many people die every year from aspirin? About 10,000 in this country alone. So, how many people die of an herb? Ever hear of one? Almost never. And herbs are used nowadays as frequently as over-the-counter drugs for the most part. Okay, there's an herbal or phytochemical alternative for almost all, if not all, pharmaceutical preparations. These alternatives are more in harmony with body cells and tissues. They have a nutritive, not a drug effect on various organs. And so I say, if there is something that you can use instead of a pharmaceutical, by all means try to do that. Okay, any questions about that? Notice this, herbs for the heart. Garlic, statins, lower LDL, turmeric, COX-2 inhibitors. COX-2 inhibitors. Let's see, what are those? What are those? Class? What are these? COX-2 inhibitors. What do they do? They what? They are anti-inflammatory, and especially I showed you the other day when I was showing you about cancer, how the COX-2 inhibitors, when your cancer, which is here, is pulling your blood supply into it, COX-2 inhibitor works right there and keeps your blood supply from being commandeered by the cancer and taken over, you see. So it works right there and keeps the blood vessels from growing. So it's a blood vessel growth inhibitor. Well, that's what we want when we're fighting cancer, do you see? And I showed you those diagrams the other day. Right where the COX-2 inhibitor, right where they work. ACE inhibitors, beta blockers, but, you know, there was an article that came out probably 18 years ago saying that many of these blood pressure drugs, many of them, were associated with a higher death rate. And so some doctors said, don't use these except after a myocardial infarction, because the death rate was higher with the beta blockers and others, by 60%. Ooh, I thought, well, that's the death knell to blood pressure drugs. Doctors won't be prescribing those anymore. So you know what the drug companies did? They increased their salesman force, increased their little favors that they do for doctors, and they increased the number of visits that these drug detailed men do for doctors, and doctors did not reduce their use of these drugs. In fact, they greatly increased. They're still being sold. Large. No, the beta blockers and the ACE inhibitors. ACE inhibitors and beta blockers. You know, I can't, but you can look them up in the physician's desk reference and get the names of these. I don't keep up with drugs that much and the trade names of them, only the generic names usually is what I know. If I have to know a name, I have to either go to the internet or go to the physician's desk reference, PDR. Now, if you don't have a PDR or physician's desk reference, just go to your local library, tell the librarian, I'd like to see your PDR. And she'll bring out the physician's desk reference and put it there for you to look at. Just see these. Okay. Oh, let's see what we're going to have back there. Here we go. Garlic, statins to lower the LDL. Turmeric, COX-2 inhibitors. Has all that in it. Pycnogenol, ACE inhibitors, as well as procyanidins in hawthorn berries, blueberries, kiwi, and so forth. I go a little too fast with some of these. All right. Exercise for the heart. Modest. Walking, biking, gardening. Reduces coronary deaths, raises HDL, lowers BPL, blood pressure. Decreases weight, strengthens the immune system, and decreases cancer risks. Neutralizes stress. Strengthens the bones. Cuts diabetes risks, banishes depression, and 1,000 other benefits. That's a quote. Okay, colon cancer in women. Women eating the highest amount of red meat, sweets, French fries, and refined grains had 1.5 times the risk of colon cancer than women who ate more fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. Now, a recent study, well, it was about 8 years ago, showed that vegans had, in one study, 98% fewer colon cancers than people who ate a mixed diet. So to me, that to reduce your risk of colon cancer that much would certainly be worth making the effort to go to a vegan diet. 6 steps against breast cancer. Eat a good diet, watch your weight, get regular physical exercise, say no to alcohol, and be wise in the use of fat. Dress for health. How do you do that? Well, you dress against the cold and dress against the heat. You have to dress against both of these. Now, some women think it's undress against the heat, but it isn't. It's dress. The American Army showed a number of years ago that when they sent their soldiers to tropical areas where it was really humid and hot, that the soldiers had more strokes and more heat stress than did who were unclothed than those who were fully clothed. Long pants and long shirts made of loose weave cotton. Loose weave, long sleeve, long pants were more capable of dissipating heat than shorts and tank tops. So, and in the summer, you need to dress your arms warmly because when you go into air conditioning, it's often too chilly, isn't it? Eat a good diet, watch your weight. Get regular physical exercise. Say no to alcohol, be wise in the use of fat, and dress for health. I went over these. All right. Now, antioxidant-rich fruits. All these, strawberries, plums, oranges, red strawberries, plum, grapes, kiwi fruits. Kiwi is very high in vitamin C. Pink grapefruits, also high in vitamin A. White grapes, they are good. They have antioxidants, but there's one antioxidant that white grapes do not have. What is that? It's called resveratrol. And what does resveratrol do for you? Keeps you from clotting your blood inside your blood vessels. Red grapes, resveratrol keeps you from clotting your blood inside your blood vessels. So get... If you need to have the anticoagulant value of foods, then eat the red grapes and not the white grapes, because white grapes don't have the resveratrol. They do have antioxidants, but not the resveratrol. Red grapes, red, blue, and purple grapes, and purple grape juice. Bananas.
It says red strawberries. Are there any other kind?
The red indicates a certain nutrient. What is that nutrient? It's called, what's the name of the nutrient? Lycopene, that's right. Lycopene. And red tomatoes also have that in them. You're right, that's like a widow woman, isn't it? Apples. Apples have antioxidants in them, but apples also lower blood pressure. Has a substance in it that lowers the blood pressure. So you need to know about these foods and eat these generously. Antioxidant-rich vegetables. Look at all of these. All of these. Kale, garlic, spinach, Brussels sprouts, alfalfa sprouts, and so forth. All of these. And as many of these as we need for the heart to prevent aging, as many of these as we need... There isn't any room for us to eat junk foods, is there? We need all that we can get, all that the Lord has provided. We want all of His blessings when we go to church. We should do the same thing when we go to our meals. We want all of His blessings. Don't settle for devitalized, unhappy foods. Okay, now let's take some time to answer your questions. What questions do you have? Questions? That was just we just didn't get around to it. You know, there's so many we didn't get around to carrots. Blueberries are up there and should be in our diet. If you don't have blueberries, grow them. They grow wherever you live in the U.S. They'll grow there. If you live in Michigan, they grow there. If you live in Florida, they grow there. Question here and question here. Yes.
CRP, if it's not elevated, but yet you have
If your CRP is not elevated, it may be that the kind of inflammation that you have does not raise the CRP, but it should raise the SED rate. So tomorrow, neither one, can't explain it. Question number two.
You said the other day not to eat honey. Well, what happens if you eat how much a day to help your iron? Because they
tell me
I'm high in iron.
High in iron?
I'm low in iron. How much iron can I get it from the lapis? How much would I need?
I need to see your lab test. As pink and plump as you look, I would have a hard time believing that your iron is low. So let me see your lab test, because labs will give for men up to 18 as the hemoglobin. But a man should not have a hemoglobin higher than about 14.5. If it gets up to 15, he's way too high. And if it's not any lower than 12.75, he's not too low.
So I shouldn't have to worry about
the lab. Let me see your blood test and I can tell you. Okay, yours. You know, that I don't know that I can tell you, but I can say this, that get yourself a blood pressure cuff and a stethoscope. If in any family where there is a risk of hypertension, you need to have your own blood pressure taking apparatus. And eat enough garlic to make it come down. So as we used to say, the dosage is enough to make it happen what you want.
Yes.
Garlic pills are also good, but you have to take a lot of them. You know, it's not one pill twice a day. That won't work. There was published in the British Medical Society Journal a research study showing that garlic was not effective in bringing the blood pressure down. When I read that article, I was disappointed, because I'd been reading that garlic was good for the blood pressure. So I was disappointed. Then I began to read how the project was set up. And it was set up like this, that the researcher took kitchen garlic and gave a quarter of a teaspoonful twice a day. So I said, that's the thing. He's giving a homeopathic dose. So I wrote to the journal and I said, what he should have given, the dosage is a tablespoonful three times a day or four times a day, not a quarter of a teaspoonful twice a day. So I wrote to the journal and the Journal of British Medical Society, and I said to the editor, sirs, I've read the British Medical Journal for many years and always respected it. I still love it. But do not publish articles again on herbs unless you get a good herbalist to help you with the review, because medical doctors don't know anything about herbs, and how can they read an article and tell whether it's going to be good or not? And I got this nice little letter back that said, "Dear Dr. Thrash, thank you for writing to British Medical Journal. We're glad you like it." Do you need a comment on herbs? Yes.
Would you recommend somebody if they're in chronic pain from a joint or muscle spasm?
Okay.
And is it bad? The two-part question: is it bad to take something like ginger, like flexible muscle spasms and all that? Is it bad to take that every day, like for the rest of your life?
No, it's not bad to take. Question is, for someone who is in chronic pain, what do you do? Can they take some kind of herb for the rest of their lives? And the answer is, most of the time, yes, they can. And most pain medications fall in that category. Pain herbs, anti-pain herbs. And there are a bunch of them. Just go on the internet and type in herbs for pain, and you'll get a number. One of my favorite is white willow bark. I like that very much. You can also use meadow sweet, and you can use Oregon grape, and there are a number. There's loads of them, and you can use those. Then there are some physical therapy type things like heat and cold and pressure or binding, and sometimes immobilization. for a short period only. I don't ever mobilize for more than a couple of days for anything that's joint or muscle. For bone, if you have to immobilize a bone for a fracture, that would be a reason. Now, can you use something like ginger, which is anti-inflammatory and anti-pain? And the answer is yes, you can use it on a long-term basis. The limiting factor is going to be irritation of the stomach. And some people will get irritation of the stomach with the long use of it. Question?
I was at a dermatologist recently, and I was telling her that, like, really hot showers, and I ended ice cold water.
Hot showers?
No, cold. We take tap water, yet barely warm showers, because hot water and ice water are injurious to the skin.
Hot water and ice water are injurious to the skin, according to the dermatologist. And so what is the answer to that? And the answer is that neither hot water nor cold water is injurious to the skin, but rather tones the skin and tones the vasculature going through the skin. So it's a good remedy. The answer is that neither hot water nor cold water are injurious to the skin. The cold water, both of them tone the skin, both hot water and cold water. And cold water helps with the blood vessels of the skin to be in good health. And the hot water does too. It gives us a sort of a vascular gymnastic. And that's good for the skin. Sorry? That's true for diabetics as well, but if it's the foot of a diabetic, usually you cannot use hot water on the feet of a diabetic. You can elsewhere, but not on the feet, because often they will not have feeling in the feet, and often they also do not have an adequate blood supply to the feet. So with raising the heat of the tissue, you increase its metabolism, but you're not able to increase the blood flow that would support an increased metabolism. And so you're likely to get blistering or necrosis of tissue. And that in a diabetic is world-class problem on the feet.
And she was just saying in general, like, that if your water is really cold, as a mentor, to add, you know, put a little heat on with it, or in the shower, not using, but just warm water.
She is absolutely correct so far as one thing about the skin is concerned, and that is the oils. Both very cold will sort of shut down the oil production in the glands in the skin in the winter time, and we can get what is called the winter itch from just not enough lubrication of the skin, and it can make a problem for the skin. And the same thing is true with very hot water, because it dissolves and takes out the oils in the skin, which makes it dry. So you do have to moisturize after either one of those, either very cold or very hot. Yes? Kelp? Kelp? It does have an increase in sodium in it, so you have to test it. It's high in iodine, but I don't usually use kelp for people with hypertension because of its increased sodium content. However, there are some seaweeds. Kelp may or may not be, but there are some seaweed that are actually low in sodium, lower than many vegetables. Question? Yes, you.
Is there a nutritional deficiency that would cause polyposis?
Any nutritional deficiency to cause cramps in the legs or arms? And the answer is yes. Magnesium is the one most likely. Sodium can also cause cramps.
Shortage,
both of those. And cramps are also due to inadequate stretching and chilling of the extremity. If you get your feet chilled, you can get cramps in your toes. you get your leg chilled, it can cause cramps in your calf muscle. So before you start taking a supplement, especially sodium, to diminish cramps, you should make sure that none of these other factors are. And stretching, you can do the stretching exercise that I showed you on the wall for, I believe I showed you for back problem. You remember that? Where you keep your heels flat on the floor, stand 2 feet from the wall, and lean your chest into the wall. Question here and then question here.
With a person that is a vegan and still has high cholesterol, what do you do?
A person who's a vegan and still has high cholesterol, meet one. I'm one of those. I was a vegan, and my blood cholesterol was still way over 200. That was about 35 years ago. And through the years, I've just stuck to my vegan diet and done everything else that I could, plenty of exercise, sunshine, this will bring the cholesterol down, and of course, trying to reduce stresses. Stresses make an increase in cholesterol because most of our stress, all of our stress hormones are dependent on cholesterol as a base for the hormone. So we want to be careful about stress also and cholesterol. So today, the last time I had my cholesterol taken, which was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, was 150-something. And HDL was in the high 40s. And LDL was nice and low. So just be persistent and don't depend on diet for everything. It's only part of the question, core of the problem. Yes? We have on my in my computer at home, I have a number of things that will make burning feet. If you will give your name and address to Vilma Myers, she will, and tell her what you want, she will send you causes of burning feet. You can also go to our website and see if we had it there. Yes?
When I start trying to walk, my heels just really hurt.
Yes. Yes, when you start to walk, now notice how she told me about this. When she starts to walk, her heels hurt from about here where the heel begins to the end of the foot. Is that it? That's when she starts to walk, especially when she first puts her weight on the feet. Grave pain. But after taking a few steps, it begins to go away a little bit. And then after you walk a little bit, it's pretty well gone for a while. Then if you're inactive for a bit, it comes back again. Is that it? Nope. There's some things you need to do. You have a condition called plantar fasciitis. He was right, I think. So, now, that was what I told you about the stretching exercise, wasn't it? Wasn't it plantar fasciitis the other day? That was the day you weren't here. And it was to get to a door facing and 2 feet away, put your chest on the wall, heels flat on the floor. That's the critical part of this stretching exercise. Heels flat on the floor. Because you've got to stretch the plantar fascia. Okay, you do that for a few weeks, and it's no better. Now, most of the time it will be. It might even be cured. But let's say you do it and yours is no better. Then what? Then you make yourself a tincture of red pepper. Did I tell you about this the other day? Take a teaspoonful of red pepper and put it in a cup full of rubbing alcohol. Label it on the outside, poison. Stir the red pepper up, let the red pepper fall to the bottom, and then dip a cotton-tipped applicator, like a Q-tip, into the alcohol with the red coloring in it, and paint your heel with it. How much and how long? 6 times a day for 6 days. then drop down to 2 times a day from then on until your plantar fasciitis is healed. When it is healed, then you can stop using it. Now, what is there in red pepper that gives you the wanted effect? It is a substance called capsaicin. And the term capsicum, which is another term for red pepper, capsicum gets its name from capsaicin, which is a nutrient in a hot nutrient in peppers, certain peppers. And that will use up P substance in the skin, and P substance is a neurotransmitter for pain in the skin. So if you use up that P substance, you will not be able to transmit the pain impulse from plantar fasciitis. Now, if somebody pinches the skin of your heel, or you step on a nail, you'll feel it big time. Even with that.
That capsaicin HP, the high potency,
yes.
Rubbed it on my back, and I thought my blood pressure was going to go through the roof because it felt like an open flame.
Yes. Okay, now I just now gave you the high potency capsaicin recipe, teaspoonful per cup. You may have to take some of this, even on your foot. You may have to take some of that and dilute it out. But if it burns, it's obvious what you have to do. Just dilute it out, take a tablespoonful of it, and put that in whatever it takes to make it so that you can tolerate, just barely tolerate, without getting too hot. By the way, people use that also in water for a sore throat. Don't put too much. Don't use the high potency for a sore throat, or you might go into a laryngospasm and lose your breath for a while. I know that from experience. Rubbing alcohol. Yeah.
But that ointment is a true ointment. So you can't dilute it down once it's on your back.
Don't put it on an open place on your skin.
Any cure for psoriasis?
Any cure for psoriasis? There is a treatment, not a cure. Here are some treatments for psoriasis. Murphy's oil soap. That cleaner? Okay, you'll use... Now, if you write to the company, they will tell you, our company makes Murphy's oil soap and has for so many years, and it is widely acclaimed as a good furniture cleaner. We're glad you're interested in our product. They will, no matter if you... I wrote to them and asked them, have you ever heard of its being used for psoriasis? They didn't mention psoriasis at all. And of course they can't. They can't even acknowledge the fact that some people do use it that way. Now, how long will it work? Oh, for a few weeks. Then it stops working. Then what do you do? Throw away your Murphy's oil? No. Put it on the shelf. It's going to work again, but it's going to take a while. Then you go to tea tree oil. Put tea tree oil on psoriasis, and it will work for a while. And then it will quit working. Don't throw away your tea tree oil. Put it on the shelf. And then get another one. We've got a bunch of remedies in our books on natural remedies for psoriasis. Or we'll be happy to send you all that we have, maybe 20 or 30 different things for psoriasis. So use one after the other. And when they quit working, don't throw them away. They're going to work again. You just have to... We don't know why the skin works that way, but that's the way it does with psoriasis. Your remedy will work for a while and then it quits. I've got 2 more minutes. We'll take your question next.
Let's say, Paul, that you said not to use honey. What
would that mean? Do not use honey if you are overweight or you have high blood pressure or arthritis or cancer or if you're a baby under 6 months. Do not use honey. That's partly for calories and partly for the fact that you don't want to use refined products. Question?
Is there a way to desensitize yourself to like garlic or onion?
Can you desensitize yourself to garlic or onion? The only thing we know when a person becomes sensitive or allergic to a food or to anything is avoidance. That's the only thing anybody knows. No allergist in the world really knows anything different. If they're good for you, it's too bad. You're missing a good food.
And they're good too.
They're good. They taste good and they flavor up food nicely. Yes.
Looking at Dr. Neil Nedley.
Neil Nedley?
Right.
Yes.
He has a study posted on there about, everybody's worried about sodium is raising the blood pressure, but he found that potassium is just as important, if not more important, at keeping it down.
Yes.
Because sometimes people are, very deficient of potassium, and that can elevate it and cause all kinds of problems.
Yes. Potassium deficiency can raise the blood pressure. Can also decrease the diminish the activity of the bowel, so it can result in constipation. But lack of potassium comes to never to a vegan, because a vegan is high in potassium. Potassium is also anti-cancer and so forth. And I'm sorry that our time is up. I enjoy answering your questions. And I hope you've learned something that has been beneficial to you and to your family this afternoon. Tomorrow afternoon, we will not have the second part, I believe, but only the first part. And I will be talking with you about, Tomorrow I have at 1:30 I'll talk about lab tests. Everybody's welcome to come. But if you had the laboratory tests done, bring your tests with you. If you've had laboratory testing done in some other laboratory anywhere, bring that with you too. Because you'll be able to look at your test from some other laboratory, and I will tell you what is normal, what is ideal. Its computer will print out what is average American, but it will not tell you what is ideal. So I'll be dealing with ideals tomorrow, and that's at 1:30. And then at 2:30, I will be talking about various treatments and also a little more on aging and a little more on testing yourself.
2:31.
Yes,
2:31s are taped also.
But you woke up at 4:00 in the morning, you're saying?
That's my understanding.
It's not the preparation. We sent it to them, but it's not on their schedule. Probably because of Sabbath preparation. We sent it to them, but it's not on their schedule. So we just think that they didn't.
Okay. So can we tape the 1:30 and the 2:30?
That's right. You can tape both of those. All right, let us. Thank you very much. Let's stand together and have a benediction, and then we have an announcement. Let's pray. Our gracious Father, thank you for a beautiful day and for your watch care over us, for providing us with everything we need, including your precious salvation for us. Now, Father, we're also grateful that you give us ways that we can heal from even serious problems by the very simple things of nature. Now we ask that you would go with us and continue to give us your blessing of the camp meeting and the blessings of the healing remedies. In Jesus' name, amen.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright 2010. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, Why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage you. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.